Bitcoin is transparent. It's not anonymous. I know like a lot of the early FUD for Bitcoin was that, oh, it's used by people who evade taxes, or it's used for money laundering or other things like that. But cash is actually, you know, the number one tool for that, not Bitcoin and digital currencies. Now, I'm not speaking about other digital currencies, some of which are more anonymous, but Bitcoin in particular, it's like it doesn't matter how much time has passed. If money was spent long ago in some sort of thing that was maybe not legal, that transaction can always be traced and you can do a chain analysis. And particularly now with the price being so high, there's an incentive out there for people to pursue, you know, taxation for Bitcoiners. So they might have seen that you recorded a capital gain or capital loss a number of years ago. So what they do now is they say, well, hey, can you give me your wallet address? Like, I'd like to go look at the wallet, your public key address, and take a look at all your transactions.
Oftentimes people's Bitcoin journey starts with purchasing a small amount and seeing it appreciate over time. For a lot of people, a small Bitcoin amount has turned into a very meaningful amount of money and then left them with the challenge of trying to figure out how to manage the tax considerations or consequences of what to do with it. We're joined today for a conversation around taxation and accounting of Bitcoin with CPA John Tellis. It's a subject that a lot of people, as they get deeper down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, have a lot of questions about. I'm Scott Deedles. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards, and part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how it will help them, understanding what you need to do with your Bitcoin from an accounting and reporting perspective is a big topic to understand, and this is where we went with the conversation this week. I hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week we are joined by our special guest, John Tellis. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. Happy to be here.
So we are just, we're recording this in at the end of 2024, and it'll air in January. Talking today about the accounting of Bitcoin, big topic. Maybe can you tell us for our listeners a little bit about yourself and maybe your Bitcoin journey or how you got started?
Sure. So I used to be a partner at one of the national accounting firms in Canada, working with high net worth families for many years. And over 4 years ago, I decided to go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And during the pandemic, where a lot of companies were pivoting really quickly towards technology, and I was fortunate enough to be able to walk away from that career. Took a year off to kind of find myself and figure out what I wanted to do next. And it was really fascinating, not just with Bitcoin as an investment, but as a technology and a tool for societal change. So I kind of fell into a Bitcoin consultancy sort of position where my skills as an accountant and with taxation and just managing wealth were sought after in the Bitcoin space. And so now what I do is specialize in helping people manage their wealth, manage their taxes and their obligations, particularly lately as the price has mooned. And I do so in a traditional sense in Canada through my accounting firm, Numberly. And I also do it internationally through a project that I am working on called Generatio. And that's more of a Bitcoin family office.
Very cool. It is a huge space. You know, Bitcoin sort of crosses, I guess, multiple objects as being an asset, as being an investment, as being something that people potentially take or send as payment, as a form of money. Lots of questions around how people should think about, you know, Bitcoin, the taxation of Bitcoin, planning for Bitcoin. And I think that, is it fair to say like that this is a fairly significant obstacle for people and businesses and just actually thinking about biting off Bitcoin, kind of the bigger picture of it? What do I want to do if I don't just want to buy it and do nothing with it?
It is. And it's something that I think a lot of people underestimated early on. Like many of the older Bitcoiners that I work with are people who got involved early. They didn't really think about the tax consequences. And so even if they didn't really make a plan, the thing is there's like a pattern of behavior, and then the blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain is immutable. So it's like, while the consequences back then of maybe ignoring how you sprinkled Bitcoin around like it was water, people are ignoring those consequences today. And I remember actually Madex said in a recent podcast, he said, imagine if like the Bitcoin you're spending today, the sats, one day they'll be like the people who spent the Bitcoin 10 years ago. So you should be conscientious about the fact that every time you spend Bitcoin, at least as a Canadian citizen, it's a taxable event. Or if you move money between wallets, it's a taxable event. Or if you earn Bitcoin, you may have to remit GST. Like there's a lot of rules on there that I think in time will be smoothed out. Like in El Salvador, for instance, like Bitcoin is treated like a currency. So when you're buying and you're selling it and managing it, like, you don't have to have those onerous tax reporting requirements. But in Canada currently, you do. So I just think that while we have grand, you know, objectives for Bitcoin in our country and in the world, the regulations have to follow in kind so they don't impede the progress of the technology, because people just are frustrated by your reporting obligations.
Yeah, maybe that's a great place to start as far as when people are looking to kind of understand these things better, or like, what are the kind of first few things you tend to find that people want to know from you?
That Bitcoin is transparent. It's not anonymous. I know, like, a lot of the early FUD for Bitcoin was that, oh, it's used by people who evade taxes, or it's used for money laundering or other things like that. But cash is actually, you know, the number one tool for that, not Bitcoin and digital currencies. Now, I'm not speaking about other digital currencies, some of which are more anonymous, but Bitcoin in particular, it's like, it doesn't matter how much time has passed. If money was spent long ago through some in some sort of thing that was maybe not legal, that transaction can always be traced, and you can do a chain analysis. And particularly now with the price being so high, there's an incentive out there for people to pursue, you know, taxation for Bitcoiners. So they might have seen that you recorded a capital gain or capital loss a number of years ago. So what they do now is they say, well, hey, can you give me your wallet address? Like, I'd like to go look at the wallet, your public key address, and take a look at all your transactions. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of an inevitable thing. But it's one thing, like, the ignorance of your obligations as a Canadian taxpayer are something that should not be underestimated when you choose to invest in it. Because if you're aware of those obligations early on, you can take steps to mitigate the tax man. And the easiest way to do that is to not sell your Bitcoin, like, to make a concerted effort to invest in it, invest in the future. If you do spend a few sats here and there, just report them, or do so from a different wallet, so you're not commingling some of your assets. So I think it's just more of a common sense approach that I take with most Bitcoiners. And that came from my own study, because I realized, like, I can't ignore the same responsibilities that I speak to clients about. Like, I had to accept them myself. With something as new as Bitcoin, they'd never been discussed really before. Like, you've never been able to hold wealth in the way that you have with Bitcoin on, like, a digital wallet or in your head via your private keys. And so you can't really look at it the same way as you would owning shares of Apple stock or shares in a small business or cash in the bank. So you just have to be mindful of those other considerations when you're choosing to get involved in Bitcoin in some capacity.
So it makes me, you know, the next question I guess I want to ask you, and thinking about that, how do you conceptualize or explain to people what Bitcoin is when they are thinking about owning it and the potential, like, other things they should consider next?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. I think if you're just looking for an allocation because you have a stock portfolio and you just want to participate in the upside, I frame it more as an investment. You know, because in Canada, we've been able to buy units of the ETF for a number of years. And most recently, this past year, you know, obviously the ETFs were approved in America. But it's more exciting to me as a technology, like a tool for economic empowerment, where I spoke in El Salvador about how, you know, typically to be like a patron for an artist or some sort of cultural property, over time it becomes more expensive because fiat loses value. Whereas if you were to do so with Bitcoin, historically at least, Bitcoin has increased in value. So you could fund like an artist's entire career with one donation. But you need to think a little bit bigger of the Bitcoin rather than it being an investment. Like, how is that actually going to be executed? Because, like, if you were to endow someone with, say, I don't know, $1 million, and let's call that 10 Bitcoin right now, the $1 million would sit in a bank account somewhere, and maybe as part of a charity over the next 10, 20 years, it could be allocated to the project. Whereas with Bitcoin, it's a bearer instrument. So if you give someone 10 Bitcoin and there's different boards of directors or people responsible for the money, you need to think about the technological significance of that asset, whereby if, like, the wrong wallet address is entered, you could lose the coins. Or if the stewardship is compromised in some way because the multi-sig setup is not resilient, you could lose it that way. So I try to frame it as more of a technological understanding that you need to grasp, because anyone can buy it. Like, anyone can just go buy it on the stock exchange, but it's very different than actually owning Bitcoin and being responsible for its use and stewardship. So technology is how I start the conversation with people.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And so you're helping people with a lot of different aspects of it. And maybe it is a good question to ask when we're thinking about intergenerational Bitcoin planning. Is this something that Bitcoiners have on their radar now?
Yes. And it's interesting because typically, like, you don't start thinking about the next generation until you start, you know, questioning your own mortality. And no one wants to do that until you're much older, because you always think it's going to be years or decades away. But a lot of the Bitcoiners are very fortunate. They got involved in it when they were young. You know, they're in their 20s and maybe they're in their 30s or early 40s now, but they have the type of wealth that most people would be lucky to have if they're in their 70s or 80s. And so it's hard to conceptualize the fact that you'll no longer be here, but that can be mitigated. You can get a will, you know, you can plan for it. It's more about like how to pass on the ideology of what you built. It's like the mechanical transfer can be dealt with. There's entities in the world that can deal with multi-sig wallets. And if, you know, God forbid you pass away, you can present them with a death certificate with your will and they could release the funds to the whoever the beneficiaries are. But it's more like the ideology. Like, Bitcoin's just such a cool technological thing. And it's not understood by so many people, including those in big tech, or at least embraced by them publicly. And so, like, the bigger question that I've been able to pull clients in with is, like, how are you gonna have, like, your children, your children's children appreciate, like, what Bitcoin meant to you? You don't have, like, a big building that you built. You don't have, like, a long career in some sort of profession, like, where you had a lot of joy. It's like, you literally just have, like, this digital wallet or thing on your phone. It might have $1 million. It might have $100 million in it. It's like, how is the next generation going to appreciate, like, how hard it was for you to buy that thing and hold that thing through many, many cycles? And so when they receive it, that they treat it with the respect it deserves. I find it's almost going back to thinking of Bitcoin as something very, very old. Like, how would you take care of a fragile painting that's been in your family for generations when, you know, like, someone drops a glass of wine and wrecks it? It's like, it's just behind glass. So, those are the type of conversations that inspire me a little bit more with Bitcoin. And then people start thinking, oh, maybe I'll implement a time lock. Maybe I won't give someone access to my coins immediately upon passing. Taxes might be due, but maybe they'll get them over the course of 50 years. You know what? Maybe I'll leave a series of puzzles, riddles, you know, and they'll have to assemble these, like, the knowledge over time. They'll need to read a series of books in order to answer these questions. And it's just like, it's just a bigger way of thinking about Bitcoin. So it's not just about money. It's about, like, what it meant and how it shaped your life and the world. So that's something we haven't been able to do with other forms of wealth. Cause worst case scenario, as you know, if they can't solve those puzzles, if they don't have, like, the access points to your keys, it's like that Bitcoin's gone. So people have a vested interest in, like, learning more about why it's important.
As you mentioned, you were down in El Salvador, and this is where we met. I saw that presentation. It was very interesting. And one of the things sort of, like, tangential to legacy planning that you were talking about as well is the idea of, like, moving your Bitcoin to a different tax jurisdiction if you were to decide to leave Canada or the United States, wherever you're listening. And this is also a very huge topic. I think it's a number of Bitcoiners have also... I guess part of it is that the nature of Bitcoin, the technology being a borderless money, makes aspects of moving it around the world simpler, but that maybe causes its own set of complications. Yeah. So maybe we could just dive into that topic a little bit and your thoughts around relocating Bitcoin to different tax jurisdictions.
Yeah, so that's the challenge. Like, Bitcoin in a way is borderless. Like, it exists kind of in an etherical space, like in the blockchain, but you do not. Like, you exist somewhere in the world, and Canadians are taxed based on their residency. So if you are a Canadian, even though you might be living in El Salvador for a little while, and I've met many people down there and in other countries in Central America, you still have tax obligations in the jurisdiction in which you are a resident. In other cases, you know, you might be taxed on your citizenship, like in America. So a challenge with Bitcoin is that, you know, if you were to leave Canada and relocate someplace else, your house is a hard asset, your stocks, your bonds, they're things that are registered, you know, in your bank as securities, like even your physical things, like you have to move. Whereas your Bitcoin, like, you can just move those words in your head. Like, they still have these onerous rules where if you bring more than $10,000 of currency into a country, you have to declare it. But, like, you can just move billions of dollars in Bitcoin and no one would even know. And in fact, was it Do Kwon who got caught with a hardware wallet? I don't even know why he had a hardware wallet. He could just remember 12 words. But hey, it's like to each their own. I guess that was the experience. Anyway, the challenge is in leaving Canada permanently is that you need to declare all of your assets at fair market value. And, you know, ideologically, people think, well, I don't necessarily want to do that with my Bitcoin. Bitcoin is borderless. I should be able to go anywhere in the world with it. And there's some game theory because certain tax jurisdictions in the world, don't charge you capital gains on Bitcoin. And they may not charge you an exit tax should you leave. They want you to come in. But the price of coming in is paying the tax to exit where you are. So you get into the situation where it's like, I don't know, I don't really want to pay a third of my Bitcoin like gains and taxes in order to leave this jurisdiction. I want to be able to travel around the world freely. But I think that in time, there'll be more harmonization strategies such that you can pay, you know, an exit tax in order to leave and maybe not be penalized, because it also holds back a country like El Salvador, who would be the beneficiary of you being a wealthy Bitcoiner from a place like Canada, come down there and build a business and invest there. And they should be rewarded for technological entrepreneurs who are there building businesses. And I have clients who are down there and they're very inspired to do so. It's kind of unfortunate when the tax jurisdiction you're in is prohibitive to doing things like that, whereas the one in El Salvador is more open. So, but you do have to be mindful of those obligations. And so we work with a number of Canadians who might have left and not considered it. So at least we have like a conversation being open about what your responsibilities are as a Canadian. And in some cases, it means to juggle your jurisdiction. So you might remain a Canadian citizen, but you're not a Canadian tax resident. In other cases, you might be a Canadian tax resident and you just have a second residency in some of these countries, and you can balance the risk reward of the choices you make. But I think that people just need to be aware of them because it's very confusing with Bitcoin and it's variable across the world, as I said.
I think it was as recently as the last maybe 3 or 4 weeks, France indicated that they were going to try and tax unrealized capital gains on Bitcoin. And this is a concept that other jurisdictions have flirted with as well. And broke governments are always looking for new ways to pilfer wealth from citizens. Maybe what are your thoughts around that concept of the challenge, I guess, of implementing a tax on unrealized capital gains, I guess in anything, but particularly as it relates to Bitcoin?
I think it's a bit egregious, and ideologically, like the spirit of taxes, like no one likes taxes. They were supposed to be a temporary wartime measure in certain jurisdictions in the world. But when you start taxing like hype, like paper gains, like they're not realized gains, what's to stop them from taxing that with your real estate, with your stocks, with your bonds, with your businesses, with your artwork, with your jewelry? Like it opens up a can of worms that I think all it's going to do is lead to other jurisdictions not doing that and creating sort of like a game theory whereby like there'll be the places in which the Bitcoiners or the wealthy people live and they're not subject to these taxes. Like anytime you try to implement like a wealth tax like that, the wealthiest people who have the most to lose, typically they have the most amount of freedom and flexibility to relocate, whether that's by tax shelters or multiple jurisdictions in which they operate their businesses. It's the regular person that suffers. And there's not enough money with the regular people to deal with that. Like in Canada, they increase the capital gains rate. They don't tax unrealized gains here, but it punishes a lot of regular Canadians who might have a second property or have some, you know, stock portfolio that they've got lucky with that is going to fund their retirement. It's just like, that's an idea where it's like ideologically, they're just like, we're going to, you know, tax the rich to help the poor. But like the average person is the one who suffers. And also it just sets a tone of like almost tyrannical type of treatment of people where it's like, you shouldn't be losing that much money. It's especially if you're not selling it, what's going to incentivize people to invest in that country? Like part of the reason we have a lot of great companies in Canada is because they weren't taxed up the wazoo along the way. They were able to build the wealth from cradle to grave. And so many of us benefited from it. Whereas if they're going to be taxed on like appreciation 1 year, it's like, are they going to then get those taxes back the next year if like the company depreciates? What about all the restaurants during the pandemic who like tanked in value, went bankrupt? You know what I mean? It's like they can't get their businesses back. So it's like, are you going to tax them on the way up and refund on the way down? It's just, you can't police something like that. It doesn't make ideological sense to me. I think it's more of a scare tactic such that maybe they ease off and then they implement like another maybe harsh tax that people hadn't considered because they're like, oh, at least it isn't as bad as that one. You know, it's just like, but I don't think it's right. I think it's just, it's wrecking the spirit of what taxes are supposed to do. And likely like the money they get from it is not going to be stewarded well anyway, because if it was, they wouldn't have to resort to things like that. Like they could just reduce their spending too in France.
Yeah. We federal government came in 50% over budget and in 2024. And there is no mechanism for accountable government spending. Couldn't agree more. You raise a really interesting point, which I think is worth like consideration for people who, you know, not everybody wants to leave the country they're living in, but this idea that Bitcoin can be, you know, the simplicity of taking it with you, I think does pose new challenges that could force governments to compete with each other on legislation in different ways where they wouldn't have had to in the past. Like if your money was kind of gatekept by the traditional financial system, you know, if it's really not an option for people to pick up and leave, that's different. And so I do wonder about the future of countries as they all get desperate in their own way, competing with each other on favorable policy instead of the size of the stick.
Yeah, it's true. A worst case scenario, if you can't come to some sort of compromise and the taxpayer dies with their private keys, you're not going to get anything. So maybe there'll be a compromise in the middle. And there's other jurisdictions, like I've said, that are tax havens where they don't tax you on your Bitcoin or crypto gains. The only risk I'd say is that some of them modified their tax legislation really quickly. Italy was one, you know, they reduced like capital gains and they've increased them again. So it's just like, you got to be careful about that. Although Canada, you know, things are slow here at times to move politically. It's like, it does have more stability, and same with America. So we know that if there is like a change to the legislation or there is case law, like typically you'll be able to depend on that as a precedent going forward. But you're right. It's like worst case scenario. It's like the Bitcoiners don't have to return, whereas it's a lot harder to move your wealth if it's in the real estate, like I said, or if it's in stocks or it's in bonds or in other things that are in registered financial institutions. The whole point of Bitcoin is to be peer-to-peer money. So it's like if it's with me, I can choose whether or not I send it to you. I may not want to send it to you, and I may accept the consequences of that choice, meaning, like I said, you never return to that tax jurisdiction and another one welcomes you. But I just don't think that's healthy behavior. And there's a harmonization between tax authorities that's supposed to be coming in a couple of years for crypto assets. And we've heard stories about some prominent Bitcoiners who are getting caught in airports and at the borders because they've absconded those responsibilities. I don't think that's a good precedent to set either. I prefer that we meet in the middle. So like you said, the fact that you can take self-custody, you don't have to actually give up the coins, I think means that some compromise will be reached. I just don't know when and I don't know how.
Yeah, it's a funny thing to think about. Having bought something, like you mentioned, a lot of people may have had some Bitcoin from early days and it's appreciated spectacularly. And, you know, the idea is that it will continue to do that and that will, you know, even people now, whatever amount that is in another 10 years will probably be in the same position. So
I hope so. But Bitcoin is also very volatile. So it's like maybe it'll keep going up. I hope that it does. But geopolitical events that unfortunately that we faced the last 20 years, sometimes they can result in huge, huge crashes to the stock market or to our economy or into our way of life. So it's like Bitcoin's not immune from that. I think it's like, yes, if you're going to tax it on the way up, okay. It's like you are tax it on the way down too. Or just be considerate and treat it fairly as you would any other asset. I don't think that's too much to ask. I think that's actually rational behavior. The problem is, like I said, because it's a technology, it's more than just an investment. You can't just classify it like anything else, which is what they currently do in Canada. You need to think a little bit deeper about it. And it just hasn't really been all around long enough. And I don't think there's been enough focus and tension on it. Like even Canada Revenue sending letters to Bitcoiners saying, give me all your, like all your transactions. Like there's an element of privacy, you know, to that where it's like, would you do that for like a normal taxpayer for all their stock portfolio transactions? Perhaps. But I don't know. I just think sometimes like they mean well, but they set legislation or they send things out that unintentionally like impede people's ability to like engage in the space. Like if people think it's going to be difficult to deal with in terms of taxation or legacy building, they may not invest in it and they might miss out on a really great opportunity. Like the expression is like, don't let the tax tail wag the investment dog, but it really does with Bitcoin. Unfortunately, that's what's held a lot of people back. And I'm a CPA. Like one thing that's like when I saw you at the council in Vancouver, at Ken Sims, he's also a CPA. And it's just like a lot of CPAs are mostly like looking backwards at like how things once were and like what's in front of them. It's very hard to have abstract thinking and think of the future. But like we're the type of people that are supposed to help set, you know, policy and treatments of it. And very few actually appreciate its complexity or they dismiss it completely. So it's like you need to have the right people with the right expertise on board so that some sort of compromise, as I said, is met. Otherwise, it might discourage Bitcoin from growing among the mass population.
You mentioned Ken Sims. So Vancouver, and this came up, I think, a little bit earlier in the conversation as well. Vancouver is taking steps towards being a Bitcoin friendly city. It's really cool, I think, development for that this is happening in Canada, and to have a mayor of a major city that seems to really, I think he really understands Bitcoin from what I can tell. Yeah, I would love to just get your perspective around, you know, municipalities or state governments, corporations. What is the, like, why would a company or a political entity be interested in Bitcoin? Like, can you maybe explain for the listeners, like, what is the logic there?
I think a lot of these new technologies, they're scary, you know, until they become mainstream. But, and I wouldn't expect like maybe a government to get involved in Bitcoin 10 years ago. But once you see it's now like a political, like it's relevant politically, particularly in America, which leads the world in so many ways, you don't want to be left behind. It's almost like years ago, smartphones like RIM and BlackBerry, like they pioneered, you know, that the device, you know, which was used by many business people. And then the iPhone came out. It's like, you want to make sure that like, as a government, you're investing in infrastructure that will benefit your citizens and also like the business climate in your country. Many other countries have really gone serious into Bitcoin. It's not just El Salvador or America. Like Canada had ETFs for a number of years through, I believe it was 3IQ Capital was the first ones, but it wasn't really well known. And if it was well known, we could have had a lot more capital in this country. So I think that expanding the knowledge base of Bitcoin and how it can be used, like Ken talked about how it could be a strategic reserve, which is, as I said, that's great. You know, we can stack it there and maybe there'll be price appreciation over time. But he also spoke about how, you know, people who are involved in Bitcoin should have the option to maybe pay your property taxes. And that's looking at more as like a medium of exchange or a technology using the coins. However, it's like I said, if there's egregious, you know, or not egregious, I should say, if there's prohibitive tax implications, like if you're going to have to pay capital gains taxes in order to pay your property taxes with Bitcoin, your property taxes are going to cost you more. Probably they already cost you too much to begin with. That's another debate. But at least he's having the discussion like that this technology allows you to do these things. It allows you to make payments. And also vendors in the city would like to receive money in Bitcoin. They would like to participate in this technology. I think it just sets the intention that Canada is a place where it is open for business. It's open for technological innovation. So even if the involvement of a municipality is small, it occupies like a big headspace in certain voters, especially those who are technologically inclined like me. I wouldn't necessarily get out of bed to vote unless there was something like dire that like I feel like I really need to vote for this party because there's something that is important to me in terms of my profession, you know, my family, my ideology. Bitcoin is one of those things. Bitcoin is a very important thing to those that are in it. I haven't met many people who once they get in Bitcoin want to leave Bitcoin unless they have a bad, you know, a bad time, they lose their coins or something through some sort of error. So it's like, you want to be, make sure you're open for business, but also be balanced so that maybe you're not all in on it. Like you provide people with the option to transact in it. The option, if you're mining Bitcoin or doing something in a municipal jurisdiction, that you will have some incentives to grow, just like they would for any other technological pursuit. Like I say, with the smartphone or in Waterloo, where our head office is, there's a lot of other companies that are doing things in artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, drones. I think it should fall into that category, and we should be known as a climate that encourages like technological innovation, and Bitcoin is at the forefront of my opinion.
For companies that have thought about this in the past, and I don't know if this applies to every jurisdiction, but there's been some challenging accounting measurements, right, of capturing the fair market value of Bitcoin. Something FASB. Can you talk a little bit about FASB and the significance of a change that's coming for next year?
Yeah. So just to dumb it down a little bit, like prior to the changes that take effect in January of 2025, the Bitcoin that's held like on MicroStrategy's balance sheet, it can be written down. It must be written down as there's unrealized losses, but it's not able to be written up. So it's kind of prohibitive to a company that reports quarterly on one of the stock exchanges because it looks like the Bitcoin has a very low, you know, I guess value, but the market value could be much higher. So under the new standards, it can be written down and written up so that each quarter you'll be able to see like if Bitcoin's price has depreciated, okay, then at least on paper, you have a loss. But when it appreciates, as it has for MicroStrategy, you'll see a large gain. It's just that the cumulative effect of the gains for MicroStrategy in America, at least for their financial accounting standards boards, as you say, FASB, they're going to be shown on the balance sheet. It's not going to be like a huge spike in earnings because they didn't really earn it overnight. It's been earned over time. It's just that there must be a transition period where like these changes are you know, they pick a date and time in which they're reflected. And then going forward, they'll be reported quarterly. So what I would say is that you need to work with an accounting firm or an accountant, or at least have people in-house who understand the complexities of the Bitcoin. It is challenging because it trades 24/7, whereas like another investment would only trade during trading hours, like on the stock exchange, or it might be something you record at book value, like if it's a hard asset and then you depreciate it over time. Bitcoin's just another beast, and it's also tedious. So if your company is on a Bitcoin standard and you might want to just separate your stack, like as an asset, you know, the Bitcoin that fluctuates in value from the Bitcoin that you maybe earn and spend, because like we have clients like that, it just becomes a nightmare. It's like, it's not like a credit card bill where like I can see like where you spent the money. It's just like, you just see all these different wallet addresses. And then if you ever reported that to the government, they might characterize your Bitcoin stack, like that should be an asset, as something that lands on the income statement, or they might classify something that lands on the income statement on the asset side, on the balance sheet side. So I think Sailor is paving the way, but I think a lot of people underestimated how unfavorable accounting treatment that just shows that the dark side of Bitcoin when it goes down and not showing the light. Now that there's more regulatory clarity and consistency and balance, that doesn't mean people will come in overnight, but they'll at least appreciate that it's treated with fairness. And so perhaps like the accounting firm that they use can be a guiding light. And I believe they have been in terms of clarifying for smaller institutions, like Semler Scientific is one much smaller entity that's doing the same thing. But I don't think they could have done it without a market leader. And I don't know that FASB would have necessarily changed the accounting rules if it wasn't for Sailor putting pressure on them. But that's a positive development, in my opinion, for Bitcoin. But it doesn't mean it's easy to do.
You mentioned a few different threads in there that might be worth pulling on. And one of them is, so how should businesses be thinking about the tax treatment of receiving Bitcoin as a payment?
There are a number of vendors who are orange-pilled in Toronto. And so it's like you go in there, you could spend a few sats if you want, like Bitcoin to anyone watching, or you can use Lightning and you can spend it on like the layer two. But the orange-pilling of the vendors rarely discusses the accounting complexity. So while you might be able to accept Bitcoin, when you go to file your tax return, if you've got a lot of those transactions, like you need to report them. So like I said, the biggest problem is just the ignorance that they have to report them. Whereas everything else going through a point of sale terminal, whether it's a credit card or a debit card or something else, a gift card, like those are all tracked more seamlessly in an accounting system. Bitcoin rarely is. So it's like, if you don't actually mention to your accountant that you have a separate point of sale terminal for the Bitcoin, you may unbeknownst to you not even be reporting it. And if you do provide the reporting, maybe it's not being reported properly because your accountant doesn't get it. So I think that you should just say, yes, you can accept this different form of payment, but you need to let whoever is helping you with your taxes, or if you're doing it yourself, know that you have an added complexity that you need to address. You can't have your cake and eat it too. And you don't necessarily want to open yourself up to a government audit because you're just receiving a few sats on the side. You didn't realize your reporting obligations. And so I think that there is an opportunity. But to a business, what I would say is just ask while I'm going to receive this money, like what other responsibilities am I going to have to also have, you know, in order for this like to be balanced. And so that's one thing I've helped a lot of people with. And typically for vendors, I find in Toronto, like Bitcoin is a really small percentage of what they receive anyway. But just to be aware that there's no free lunch. Like you do have to separately, as I say, disclose like the Bitcoin you're stacking between the Bitcoin you're earning and spending.
So would you say then, maybe as a follow-up question to that, is for companies that are thinking about interacting with Bitcoin, the most important consideration for how they're tracking it on their balance sheet is how it's being used? And if it's not, then what would you say are they really like critical considerations?
I think it's just education to understand that you can make more money if you receive Bitcoin, if you're in a place in which people are looking to support you. Like, I can't remember the name of the place, the coffee shop in Quebec, where it's like advertised, like, oh, they're accepting Bitcoin at this place. So it comes in, it's a big opportunity, but it just comes with reporting responsibilities. And once you understand those responsibilities and you go through a single year, After that, it's more routine. It's like the first year of a business is challenging, right? It's just like you don't realize all the different taxes you have to pay, the things you have to do, but it starts to become rhythmic over time. You get comfortable with it. And that's the thing with Bitcoin. There's a learning curve with Bitcoin that you need to appreciate. I think that like shortcuts and just say, just tap here, I'll accept the Bitcoin. You're underappreciating like how important it is and how beneficial it can be. And I think like the biggest shortcoming of businesses with Bitcoin is that they just convert it to dollars. Like you don't want to just collect Bitcoin and convert it to dollars if it's been appreciating so well for so many years. You want to stack it, but like you can't just tell someone it's important. They have to understand why it's important. So I think the biggest consideration is that you need a little bit more education to do it. And like, I remember being in El Salvador, some of the waiters or waitresses, you know, like the Bitcoiners will insist on giving them a tip in Bitcoin, but many of these people live paycheck to paycheck. So it's like, you're just like, here, I want to just throw to you, like these sats to you here. I'll help you set up a wallet. But like, they look at that, like there's a lot of errors that take place where like they maybe never even get the money, particularly with like the wallets the government rolled out. A lot of people like hack them. And so like the average person didn't actually benefit from it, whereas like you were well-intentioned. So I think as a small business owner, you just have to realize like with anything else operating a small business, there's an upside to it, but an education gap that you need to fill. And if you can fill it, you can have a great competitive advantage in the market, particularly because like taking dollars and spending them, they're not appreciating. Like if you look at the Canadian dollar versus the American dollar, it's like it's at a very low point, whereas at Bitcoin's at a very high point. So there's an incentive to educating yourself, not only in the short term, but in the long term, but definitely just not being ignorant of that, I think is the domain of whoever onboards them. Just be transparent with them that like, it's great, but there are other things to consider rather than just receiving Bitcoin.
Yeah. It makes me think about, you know, seeing El Salvador myself firsthand was very interesting. And even El Salvador has kind of like walked back some of their Bitcoin policies in the last week as a result of loans they've taken from the IMF, and which kind of, I think, touches on an earlier point you made about the continually sort of evolving landscape internationally. And here in Canada or North America, you get a lot of Bitcoin skepticism, I think, because of the fact that you can't go into a Starbucks and buy a coffee with Bitcoin here. But that has to do a lot with tax rules that are native to those countries where the people are. So Do you foresee a near-term future playing out where the Bitcoin ecosystems of different countries looks just more and more different? Or are we headed towards, or do you think we're headed towards a more standard sort of like global Bitcoin policy? Well, if you had to bet, where would you go?
It's interesting because like to us here and to me, like when I first got involved, it was more like an investment because I can afford to have investments. Like many of us are lucky in Canada. Whereas when I've traveled through Central America, like in El Salvador, it's more important as a medium of exchange. So I think that there will be tax harmonization for Bitcoin that people hold as an investment. But I think that there should be some leeway when you're using it as a medium of exchange. Maybe there's some sort of cap on what that spending is per year. It's just too, like I said, it's just too tedious to track. And like, I don't also think making it a currency, like it's better that it's optional in El Salvador, because outside of the touristy areas, I don't think the vast majority of people use Bitcoin because it depends on like a stable internet connection, which you don't have in countries like that. So I think that it will depend on what the most beneficial treatment is for the population of people. And because Bitcoin can be both, like the people transacting as a medium of exchange, like maybe they won't do it on chain anymore. They'll use more of the Lightning Network because it would be cheaper to do transactions. And those of us stacking in, you know, developed countries, like the amount of Bitcoin that it takes off the exchanges means that like the people using it as a medium of exchange can, their dollars will appreciate, you know, they'll become wealthier in time, be able to grow and build their businesses. Like there's inspiring stories in El Salvador of people who've been using it for a number of years. They might have a whole coin. Like it may not sound much to like a Canadian, but to someone there, like that's a huge amount of wealth that is life-changing and they could use to, you know, build a business, provide for their family's future and so on. I just think that I don't think it should be treated the same internationally just because like countries have different characteristics and areas in which they're weak and strong. So you have to have a balanced approach. And I think that El Salvador evolving is a good sign that it's not an all or nothing. It was a means to an end to get them noticed on the world stage, to build up an enormous stack, you know, to pay down their debt, but ultimately to concede, maybe not all of your citizens want this, but it's like, just give them the option to do it. I think that's a better compromise, because even in Canada, I don't know if people like things when they're forced upon you here. We like to have the flexibility to choose, you know, to have the sovereignty of choice. And Bitcoin, even if it is a great investment, there's other reasons people don't want to use it. People are still using cash, especially older generations. Cash is king. And so you got to give people the flexibility to do that. So I think that, let's answer your question, there will be some harmonization internationally among like countries like Canada, like say France, America. But in you know, more developing countries, I think they should give them a little flexibility so they can see how Bitcoin changes. And in Africa in particular, you know, more mining is relevant. We haven't even talked about that. You want to incentivize like Bitcoin mining, where some of the, you know, hydroelectric energy might be otherwise stranded and not used. So it's like, you don't want like a prohibitive measure in one country to impede development in another, because Bitcoin can be looked at in so many different ways.
Yeah, that is a huge topic on its own. Maybe we'll save that for next time. Maybe as a final thought, I'd love to just ask you, so for somebody who's listening and maybe has some Bitcoin or is thinking about buying some, never really considered the tax side of it. What is like one thing they should be thinking about, or the handful of things that should be on their mind as they, kind of make an informed decision?
I would say for me, the problem with these technologies that come out is that you take for granted all the things you have that are simplistically understood today, like how easy it is to use an iPhone, and you dismiss things that are difficult to use because you figure, oh, someone else will figure it out and then it'll come to me, it'll be great. It's like, I wish, like I'd heard about Bitcoin for many years before I bought it. It's like, I just dismissed it because I thought like, what's the point in like investing the time in this thing? Like, even if I lost all the Bitcoin and I could have bought it when it was $10, I still would have had like a good understanding of it. I think that like, don't think of it as just another investment, another stock. You're going to get rich. It's like, if you come in with a shallow understanding like that, probably you're going to make a mistake along the way. It's like, give it the attention it deserves and think of it almost like Alex Antonopoulos as the internet of money. No two perspectives, I believe, in Bitcoin are the same. And mine might change tomorrow based on something I learned, but it's like, it actually means something to me. And so I tell people, like, be mindful of the taxes, you know, be mindful of your legacy, your estate, managing your coins properly. But like, that's just my own perception of it. Your perception is going to be different. You have to figure out like, what is it about Bitcoin that inspires you to get involved? And once you're involved, maybe think about how you can give back. Because if all I ever did was help people protect their Bitcoin, they're not helping other jurisdictions in the world grow. They're not helping the network grow. You can't just hold it. And I don't think that's a good thing. Just big corporations hold it or wealthy people hold it. How can we use it? How can we experiment with it? Like, you've got to like give it that attention it deserves and think of it as, if I was involved in the internet, people used to think it was crazy to have a website. Even like being an accountant prior to 2020, the idea that you would be on a call like this was ludicrous. Not to say people didn't do it, but this is all I do now. It gets crazy until it isn't. It's just that I think that I understand what it means to be on a call now, but I really don't. I underestimated how important it was to like go actually see people in person. Otherwise, I wouldn't travel to El Salvador. It's like, there's only so much I can learn from like a digital interaction. I still need a physical interaction. There's only so much I can learn from Bitcoin as an investment, thinking of it as taxes. I just think that, give it the respect it deserves as a technology. Understand that there will be some ignorance on the way, but I haven't met a single person in Bitcoin who it wasn't the greatest thing they found. And maybe that's, you know, I'm in an echo chamber because of the type of people I work with, but it's just empowered people in so many ways beyond wealth, just in framing and understanding of the world and technology and where we might go next.
John, I really appreciate you coming on to share some of your insights. This is a massive topic that I know a lot of people have a lot of interest in. And we'll include some relevant links in the show notes, but if there is somebody who wants to reach out to you directly, is there somewhere we could point them specifically?
Sure. I don't have much of a presence on social media now other than LinkedIn. So that would be the best way to reach out, or you can take a look at my website, my accounting firm, numberly.ai or generatio.me, where we do the Bitcoin consulting, as I said, for family offices. But happy to have conversations about any subjects, even if they're not accounting and tax related. I find I learn as much from the people I interact with as they do from me. And like I said, it's a nascent space. It's an exciting space. I love to work in it and grow. And so happy to have a conversation with anyone who's interested in learning more.
Thanks again, John. And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the show, I want to thank you as well for tuning in. And we hope to see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.